Okay, good morning. I want to thank you all for coming and visiting the Renewable Fuels Association Ricardo's booth. My name is John Kassab. Kelly Davis here to my left is with the Renewable Fuels Association. The two of us are going to give you a kind of a brief, up to a half hour overview of where we see things going with both engine technology and with fuels over the course of the next several years. We'll of course be available a little bit afterwards to follow up with any other questions you may have. So I'm with Ricardo. We're an engineering consulting company. Next slide, please. So we're a global engineering service provider. We're headquartered in England. We were established about 100 years ago. And since we're traded on the London Stock Exchange, you know, we have revenues that are listed in pounds sterling. So we do about 200 million pounds a year in business, and almost all of that is engineering service. We do a very little bit of niche manufacture, such as the McLaurin engine. We have a little stand on that. I and my colleagues who are here from Ricardo, we're all from the Detroit area in the States. We also have an office in Chicago and facilities around the world, as you can see on the map. As I said, we were founded almost a century ago. Our founder, Harry Ricardo, is an engineer, got started working with engine engineering. And you know, we've certainly done work with passenger cars, but also with motorcycles, with trains, boats. If it has an engine in it, or if it has a transmission in it, we've probably had a hand in that kind of product at some point or other, including things like wind turbines, military vehicles, you know, sports cars, and the like. And this is just a brief sample of the kinds of customers we work with. You can see several major car manufacturers, truck manufacturers. We do some work advising government agencies and a handful of other companies as well. So a little bit about, you know, where we see alternative fuels, and part of it is everything old is new again. So looking at three key automotive inventors from about a century ago, Henry Ford, and of course, with the Ford Motor Company, Charles Kettering with General Motors, and Harry Ricardo, our founder, all three of them had anticipated depletion of petroleum reserves. And of course, I think they'd probably be surprised at how long we've been able to keep pushing that horizon out, but there is a horizon at some point where crude oil will be more expensive to pull out, you know, not worth it really anymore. And all of them expressed some hope for human destiny beyond fossil energy. So Henry Ford was thinking, well, for making from crops, that'll help sustain rural economies, right? Because farmers will have this market for their products that'll be fairly stable, not quite as volatile necessarily as the fuels, as the food market might be. Charles Kettering was hoping to save the auto industry from oil shortages, definitely ahead of his time. And of course, Harry Ricardo's interest was in energy security. Now, Harry being British, this is well before they discovered crude oil under the North Sea, would have been able to do anything about it. So he was very mindful that the British Isles don't exactly have their own crude oil on land, right? So ethanol, for example, for them, and you know, certainly for us in the United States, provides away a domestic energy source that's a little bit buffered from foreign affairs, basically. All of them had opinions on ethanol as an anti-knock additive, and we'll touch on that. And Ricardo even sold a racing fuel, the Discol racing spirit, that's a high ethanol blend. And, you know, like I said, everything old is new again, sooner or later. So then the big questions are, what's the ultimate fuel economy possible for making engines smaller while maintaining their performance, and where does fuel octane play into that? So this is the big challenge in front of the passenger car industry. So for both passenger cars and light trucks, there are new federal rules that have just been finalized. They're about to be published in the next week or two for the light duty vehicle fleet fuel economy, the CAFE rules, and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's mostly CO2. So this is joint work of two federal agencies, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and then also the California Air Resource Board. So it's a bit of a miracle that you can get two federal agencies and one state agency playing along at all, much less coming up with harmonized rules. So it's pretty exciting stuff. And then as an engineer, the other exciting thing is that if you look at model year 2011, in terms of the fleet average fuel consumption, and you look out to 2025 model year vehicles, new cars are going to burn half as much fuel as they do right now. Right? And that's basically three product cycles at a pace of about 5% per year. So there's a lot of engineering work that's going to need to have to happen in order to get there, both for passenger cars and light trucks. And vehicle electrification, so increased hybridization of vehicles, is going to be part of the solution. But current hybrid systems are still very expensive. And so what we see is internal combustion engines are very much going to be part of the mix over the next decade or two. You know, so both in conventional powertrains and with hybrids. So that's the fuel economy part of it. And then in addition, there's also regular pollutants. And California is the one that continues to kind of lead the way in terms of emission standards. So their rules for LEV 3 mean that by 2022, almost all vehicles have to be SULEV or better. And SULEV stands for Super Ultra Low Emissions Vehicle. I don't make up these names, I just tell you what they are. But it's very challenging in terms of nitrogen oxides and particulates and carbon monoxide, you know, things that, especially if you're in Southern California, you know, you want to actually be able to see the mountains and not this brown, smoggy haze. And there are enough other states to follow California's rules that it's almost a national standard. It's certainly at least a third of the U.S. market in terms of potential customers follows the California standards for these emissions rules. And then the third part of the puzzle is the renewable fuel standard. So under the Energy Independence and Security Act, which came in, I think, in the second Bush administration, the EPA has set targets for amounts of biofuels, renewable fuels, that'll be sold in the U.S. market. And so it's a mix of corn-based ethanol and other advanced biofuels from other sources. And it, like I said, it's a fixed volume. You'll see it's in billions of gallons per year. So you have that. You have overall fleet fuel consumption coming down. And this is going to be a very interesting part of the overall picture. How do the biofuels work in with what we're doing from a technology point of view? Okay, so just a brief reminder for you, what do I mean by fuel octane number? It's a measure of the anti-knock properties of a motor or aviation fuel. It's used in an internal combustion engine. And knock basically means that the fuel and air ignites before you trigger the spark, right? So it means things start burning before you want them to. And a higher octane number means that the fuel can withstand more compression before it starts burning itself. So for example, high-performance engines tend to do better with higher octane fuels in them. The pump octane number, so what you would see on the pump, the AKI, it's often called, it's the average of the research octane number and the motor octane number, both of which are measured by testing. And there's a standard scale from 0 to 100, and then everything else kind of falls in on that scale depending on how they perform. And so it's this is the R, this is the M, and the R plus M over 2 that you would see on the pump. So a higher fuel octane number means that you can push the engine harder before it starts knocking. And also allows you to not have to dump in extra fuel in order to manage what's going on in the engine. So in terms of where we see engine technology going, things like direct injection, things like turbocharging or other boost, and certainly higher compression ratios in the engine, all of these things improve the engine efficiency. All of them work better if you know that you have higher octane fuel available. Okay, so I said before, we see spark-ignited engines, especially being a dominant primary propulsion source. So diesels are about 6% of the market. We see it being somewhere in that range, even out to 2025. But you take all the vehicles that have or should have some sort of internal combustion engine in them, and we're still looking at 85 to 90% of the market having an engine in them of one size or another. And a lot of them still being basically a conventional powertrain where you have the engine attached to the transmission and there's not a hybrid machine, there isn't a big battery or any of that. You see, this estimate is a couple of years old. There's a little bit with CNG, there's a little bit with battery electric vehicles, but you see both of those probably being niches, but that, you know, certainly the CNG picture might change in another few years. Just to kind of walk you through the pathway, so in terms of engine development, any technology development, we'll start typically with the research or demonstration engine. So the EVDI engine that's in the truck is definitely in this phase. It will move into premium product, so a niche production or a high-value car where the purchasers are willing to, maybe the kind of person who would spend a little extra to get a fancier engine in their car, for example. And then eventually it moves into mass production where we're making hundreds of thousands or even millions of them a year. So, you know, in terms of what's considered mass production right now, it's port flow injected, naturally aspirated engines. That's the standard for spark ignited gasoline engines right now. And there are premium products you can get currently that have the direct injection but aren't boosted, that have port flow injection but do have a turbocharger on them. Atkinson cycle engines or Miller cycle engines are typically used in hybrids. So like the Toyota Prius has an Atkinson cycle engine, a lot of the other hybrids that are kind of at that end of the range. Because you get more efficiency, you have the electric machine to make up kind of where it doesn't have as much oomph at low engine speed. And then there are things, there are engines available now that have both direct injection and turbocharging or boost. And so the Ford EcoBoost engine is an example of that. There's some others that are available in the market as well. So where we see things going from into the future is sort of along this direct injection and boost pathway, where basically we go from single stage turbocharging to two stage turbocharging, so a lot higher intake pressure, try to continue to get more efficiency out of the engine, either with fuel enrichment or trying to work towards not having to add extra fuel at the high speed, high load condition, because there is an emissions benefit for that. And then possibly, we would see this more in Europe, even operating as a fuel lean mode. So a fuel lean spark ignited engine is going to look like a diesel that has spark plugs in it and burns gasoline, right? That's the, from a conceptual point of view, that's kind of where that moves. The EVDI engine has features of both enrichment and no enrichment mode. It's using a recirculated exhaust gas to help moderate the combustion temperature, to help dilute the charge a little bit in order to manage the operation. So to wrap up my part of this talk, so over the next decade, we're going to see a lot of new technology coming into internal combustion engines that are going to significantly improve their efficiency. And you know, it's, a lot of it is being driven by the fuel economy targets that have just been put in place that cover out the model year 2025. Vehicle electrification, you know, hybridization will be part of that solution, but most of the vehicles in 2025, I mean, even the EPA's estimates are it's going to be 80-85% internal combustion engines in those vehicles. And battery-only electric vehicles are just going to be a little niche. And the technologies that are going to facilitate this efficiency improvement will have a natural thirst for higher octane. And you know, we see increased ethanol content in the fuel as being part of that pathway towards facilitating maybe that better engine performance.